Here we are again, another thrilling episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies.
Dun, dun, dun.
We're going to be talking about the new movie Creed. That's kind of like Rocky 7 in a way. We're going to be talking about other great boxing films. Well, I didn't say that Creed was a great boxing film. We're going to be talking about other boxing films that are available on demand or just on DVD. We're going to be talking about some new releases like Everything Will Be Fine. Amy just came out on demand and on DVD about Amy Winehouse, and Breathe, a very interesting French film directed by Melanie Laurent. She was in Glorious Bastards. We are joined today by the one and only incomparable comic, and you know him from Arliss, Robert Wall, my friend, our friend Robert Wall. Hi, Robert.
Hey, nice to be here. I am known as O&O.
Yeah, well, the one and only.
O&O.
And
everything now. O&O.
I saw that. That was cute.
And as always, Bill McCuddy.
That's me.
And
you're
Bill.
As always.
And Bill Brigoli.
Right here in the car.
As always.
I'm an AA.
If it's your first time joining us, this is sort of an after show to a television show we do on New York One and Time Warner Cable called Talking Pictures, where out of the 300 movies that are generally available at any given time on your cable box, we tell you what's worth watching and what's not worth watching, and as Bill McCuddy always says,
we watch the bad movies so you don't have to.
We absolutely do. But we're going to start with a theatrical release called Creed. Now, as I said earlier,
say hi to Bill Brigoli.
I did say hi to Bill Brigoli. Bill responded.
What would his name
Bill
be?
Bill went all the way to Philadelphia for this Creed press conference. Which I'm going to talk to.
So we have a little sound from those stars.
Yes, we have Bill's going to play interviews later with Sylvester Stallone and Michael B. Jordan.
That's right.
And you also got the director of Amy, right?
Yeah.
All right, so that we look forward to that. So even though it's called Creed, this is technically Rocky .7, or if you want to count that horrendous movie Grudge Match, which had Stallone climbing into the ring with Robert De Niro.
Kevin Hart, one funny joke.
Yeah, maybe it's...
You knew Jesus. What was he like?
Maybe it's Rocky 7.5. In this particular movie, Stallone is, as Rocky, is old, he's lonely, he's running his restaurant, he has very little purpose in life. That is until he decides to manage a fighter that he takes a personal interest in.
The bastard
named
child.
Adonis, who is the bastard child of his longtime rival and friend Apollo Creed. Adonis doesn't want to fight under the name Creed. He wants to make it on his own. But since the movie is named Creed, I think you know pretty soon, early in, that he's going to actually adopt the name Creed.
And by the way, the film itself is shorter than this description.
A little more about the film. Michael B. Jordan, who I really loved in Friday Night Lights, plays Creed Adonis.
And from Penn Station.
And to me, this is why don't you guys chime in your opinion? I have very distinct opinions on this, but I've talked enough. Robert, what did you think of it?
Well,
you're a sports guy, too.
Yeah.
Right. You're a sports guy.
Here's the deal with this movie. If the hook of the movie is, because I think it kind of described this movie sort of backwards. Because it's about...
Get used to that with him on this show,
by the way. Only because this is the difference between what I expected and what the movie is, and how smart it is in that sense. First of all, this movie is not written by Stallone. It is not directed by Stallone, although his fingerprints are...
It's the first Rocky movie that is not written by Stallone.
Right. I'm sure he did 90% of his dialogue, though. I'd be willing to bet on that. But
the yos are all his.
It was directed by a guy, Ryan Coogler.
Here's the thing is, the movie, if you were to describe it, is about the son of the illegitimate son of a boxing champion who has an anger problem as a kid. He's taken in and becomes this... what is he? Was he a marketing guy?
Yeah, for about 5 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. He gets a degree because Felicia Rashad, his mother, takes him in after he rests in prison, and he grows up. But unbeknownst to her, he's been going to Mexico every week to fight. He's 15-0, but apparently he doesn't have a blemish on him because he never figures that out. And then he decides he wants to become a boxer under his own name, but he doesn't want to have anything to do with Apollo Creed, so he goes to Philadelphia because he doesn't want anything to do with Robert. So he goes and he meets with the trainer, he wants the fighter who fought with his father to train him. Now, the key of it is it happens to be Rocky.
Right.
So Rocky is actually the supporting character in this thing, basically. He's not the lead. The kid is the lead.
He's Burgess Meredith.
Yes, basically. Yes, yeah. With more of a backstory.
And he's the same age in real life that Burgess Meredith was in the original Rocky.
The thing that is, at a time when Hollywood's product is so bad, the Hollywood product is miserable. This is a Hollywood product that is actually pretty good. With the exception for me of the last 10 minutes or so, with that terrible scene, Coda at the end on the steps, and the...
Oh, God, come on. I thought it was okay.
I would rather have that than the fight.
Every Rocky movie has the steps. Every Rocky movie has those stupid steps.
They saved it for the end.
I'm not saying it's a good thing.
I'm just saying every Rocky.
It was over. The great thing about the first Rocky, which is a terrific movie.
It won the Academy Award for Best Picture.
There's a lot of movies that won the Academy Award that weren't.
Well, that's true, too.
You know, I defy you to sit through The English Patient again.
I didn't like it the first time around.
Or Crash.
I love Crash.
I love Crash, too.
You're the one.
I'm not the one, obviously. Obviously, I wasn't the one.
I hated No Country for Old Men.
I think it's an overrated movie.
And that did not deserve Best Picture. Nor did I think Birdman deserved Best Picture.
No, you're wrong.
I think it deserved Best Picture.
Birdman, for the first hour and a quarter, I'll say, I am so in love with. And then the last 20 minutes, it's like...
It's a good movie, but it's not a Best Picture.
Wait a minute, but this Best Picture...
Brave choice.
We'll get into this.
We'll get into this. Let's finish Creed.
Because we should explain that we are in the middle of the Oscar campaigning right now, and Robert, who is a member of the Academy, is right in the trenches.
And I'll show you the five on the way down here. Four emails about for your consideration.
Right.
For,
all
because they deserve it.
Let's finish Creed anyway, and then we'll move on to the Oscars.
So Stallone, by the way, now you mentioned is so good in this movie.
That's
the thing. Is that the two leads are so good in this movie. That, like, at a time when I say the Hollywood product really sucks, it elevates this movie. And you know what's funny as I watch the movie? I don't know if you'll agree with this or you thought about this. You mentioned Grudge Match. Second movie Stallone's done with De Niro that I know of, Copland being the other jumps to me. There are times when he's Rocky, and I felt at times I could see the De Niro influence in some of these line readings, because I've worked with De Niro.
Interesting.
And I said, he's so good, and... He's so good in the movie, and you feel for it. Listen, he should know the character, right? That I definitely recommend this movie. You know, it's at a time, like I say, when Hollywood product, not independent films, studio product, is so shitty that you could say that. This podcast,
yeah, you can.
Sure. No.
I got to recommend this. It's good holiday entertainment.
And it's well-directed, well-made. I mean, there's a fight sequence in it that's a single take in the middle of the movie.
Yes,
that's like 6 minutes long.
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
Yes. I didn't think the last fight scene was very good, though.
I'll tell you something. I saw it with a real audience, and when the Rocky theme comes on at the end, everybody applauds in the theater.
Yeah.
I mean, it was amazing. So Bill actually sat down and talked to some of these.
Well,
before we get to that,
what do you think of it, Bill?
I enjoyed it. I think whoever told Stallone to say yes to Ryan Coogler was a smart guy.
Right. Yeah, well, they had to drag him in. No, you take the dump.
Well, okay. I don't think it's a bad movie on any level. I mean, I think it's an entertaining movie, but I don't think it's as enjoyable as you guys did. And the reason being that to me, it's really the first Rocky film, except you're casting Michael B. Jordan in the Rocky role. Like you said, Sylvester Stallone is doing the Burgess Meredith role. He's Mickey the Trainer. Meredith. You've got Michael B. Jordan with a rocky relationship with a girl that eventually she becomes very supportive, which reminded me of the Adrian thing in the first Rocky. Then you've got the climactic bout, the last fight, which I knew the outcome of that before it happened because you're following the same pattern as Rocky.
I'm
saying that if you never saw the original Rocky, maybe this would be like, wow, this is interesting, but it to me it was very formula, and I knew what was going to happen every step of the way.
I agree with you on every point about it. That's why I said Hollywood product formula, but much higher, a better level, and those two people are very good. Jordan and Stallone are really, really.
Will Stallone be nominated for?
Well, you know what's interesting? I thought about this because I was watching it and I thought, you know, they nominated the Lord of the Rings movies three times. What's the difference? What is the difference? Same movie. So it's like, what's the difference? He's playing the same character, you know, but it's not the same character because it's a character at a different point in his life and a different age. And he is totally, the choices he makes I thought were terrific.
Well, and he's the average age of the Academy voter.
I don't know.
Voter.
In Rocky V, he had In Rocky V, he had Alzheimer's, and he couldn't even remember his own name. And then in Rocky VI, he's back in the ring fighting like George Foreman at an advanced age.
But I don't watch it. So if I hadn't seen the movies, like I said.
I don't know. To me, I had a...
Hardy Boys. I don't watch
give
it.
People with Alzheimer's some hope.
I found it to be an entertaining film, but a lot of been there, done that for me. I just knew it was going to happen.
Nothing wrong with
that.
That's
95% of all Hollywood movies.
But Bill Brigoli,
if the nose ain't broke, don't fix it.
As you said, you spoke to some of these.
Right. They actually sent a bunch of us down to Philadelphia, and we got to be in the gym, the Front Street gym it's the second gym that Stallone brings him to in Philly.
Yes.
And you know what? For
the
gym,
grittier gym.
Right.
Yeah, grittier looking, but to be honest with you,
with
for
the
gym
guys.
Being in there, it smelled really good.
Yeah, well, they make sure of that. They make sure. Then I'll bring a press conference there.
One of the first things Stallone was asked was what he said when Ryan Coogler approached him with the idea of making a Rocky movie.
No. I said, no. It's as though, you know, because it was such a struggle to get the last one done. And I was so happy with Rocky Balboa and the conclusion of Rocky's story was over that I thought we don't need to go any further with it. And I dismissed his idea, but then his adamance about doing it. He was very, very adamant about it. He came back a year and a half later. And then I thought, you know, my story is told, but there's a whole other generation out there, two generations since Rocky started. Their story has not been told.
And then we asked Michael Jordan.
Jordan was there?
Yeah. Michael B. Jordan.
Johnny B. Good, right?
That's right. Michael B. Jordan. And he was asked how he felt about being part of a Rocky franchise.
It's like more of an honor, you know, to be, you know, accepted into this world, this legendary world that's been around for 40 years, longer than I've been alive, and you know, to be trusted, you know, with these characters that, you know, Sly built his, you know, his career on, it's an honor.
Well, he's right. It is an honor. And I'm surprised that Stallone was so resistant at first because these guys made a great movie, Fruitvale Station. And,
same direction.
Jordan, yeah. Jordan,
pretty cool.
Jordan walks the walk.
About this. They had to talk about this a long time then.
Well, yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure.
And it took him a while probably to get in that kind of shape.
Sure, and also, you know, Stallone, I'm sure, was resistant. And you see Chartoff and Winkler all over it. Winkler, of course, recently passed, didn't he?
Winkler still left Chartoff.
Chartoff just passed. Okay.
And Winkler was at the press conference, actually, and he said, I told him, you want a new audience? Come
These
on.
These are the original producers, we should say, for people.
It struck me.
Who also did another boxing movie we'll talk about later.
Well, I guess the gold standard of boxing movies would probably be Raging Bull. I think that's,
Don't go there, man, because I can see you're not a... okay, it's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Here's my take on Raging Bull, which is also produced by Chartoff Winkler. Raging Bull is a phenomenal piece of filmmaking technique. For me, about a very uninteresting topic.
Jake LaMotta was uninteresting?
Jake LaMotta is about as uninteresting a person as I could possibly... There's no way I would care at all about this bum... You know, if it wasn't for the technique, the acting, the style. Like I said, it's a great piece of filmmaking for me about a very uninteresting subject.
I'm captivated by that movie from start to finish. The On Location Bronx shoot is great. Kathy Moriarty, terrific. De Niro, like, portraying basically an animal. I mean, that scene when he throws it's even comical, you being a comic, when he throws the plate of food, the whole table full of food that his first wife prepares, or when he's telling Joe Pesci, who you see in the first time we really saw Joe Pesci, and not a psycho Joe Pesci, like from Goodfellas or Casino. He's more of a timid character here. Yeah. And he's saying, wrap the towel, Joey, like I told you. Hit me in the face. I could go on with 30 scenes that are just so memorable in that movie. And the fight scenes are filmed just brilliantly.
Well, it's a technique. They're totally stylized.
Defend me here, Bill.
I agree with what Robert says about it's great filmmaking. But I was intrigued by this guy. When he goes in to sell the jewels out of the belt to raise money, and the guy goes, the pawn shop goes, where's the belt? It'd be so much worth so much more. Your heart just breaks for this
bomb. What's he doing in the beginning? He's doing a scene.
He's doing a one-man show.
Yeah. Where on the waterfront.
He's doing on the waterfront. What do you think of Raging Bull, Bill Brigoli?
I really like Kathy Moriarty in it.
All right, so
everybody. No, I don't have.
All right, so what's your favorite boxing film of all time?
I wrote them down. Hold on, make sure.
Go ahead.
I got a picture.
You know, while you're looking at that, I got to tell you that in the 40s, it seems like every actor, before they made it big, you know.
Garfield.
You know, right, John Garfield. Paul Newman's first book, big movie, Somebody Up There Likes Me.
He wasn't supposed to play the part. Who was supposed to play the
James
part?
Dean?
Right.
Right, and then Kirk Douglas.
Who's in the first scene on the roof of Somebody Up There Likes Me? There's one scene, because he's a juvenile delinquent in the first scene, right?
Yeah.
And there's three guys, and there's one shot of one of the three guys up there.
It has to be Sal Mineo or somebody
Steve
like that. Steve McQueen.
There's one shot. He sees Steve McQueen.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, Paul Newman said he couldn't get any work until James Dean, you know, unfortunately died, because he was getting all the roles that, all the roles were going to James Dean. But, yeah, so John Garfield, Kirk Douglas.
Actor in the history of motion pictures.
James Dean?
Yeah. Well, Kirk, in my opinion.
Kirk, he died, so he was smart to die young.
If Travolta had passed after Grease, he would have been James Dean.
So,
right?
I mean, no, that's interesting.
So Kirk Douglas really makes it big with Champion.
Right?
And John Garfield makes
Body
it big,
and
right, in Body and Soul.
William
and
Holden.
Paul Newman makes
Holden,
it, right. William Holden, very good, in Golden Boy. And Paul Newman and Somebody Up There Likes Me. And Sylvester Stallone in Rocky.
Right.
And so many of these boxing films have been launching pads for huge careers. You know, it seems like it's like, where's your requisite boxing film that you're going to do?
Ron Shelton, writer-director friend of mine, talked about, and does a lot of sports.
But you've been in several Ron Shelton films.
Yeah, responsible for my career. So, but he said, you know, he's done every sport. He's done golf, he's done boxing, he's done baseball, he's done. And he said, well, boxing by far lends itself more to filmmaking than anything else, because it's easier to tell. I mean, two guys in a ring, one guy falls, one guy.
Right.
You know, golf, you can't, you know, people right. can't figure it out.
Although he did do golf with Tin Cup.
Right, yeah. But it's still hard, because in golf, your leader may be five groups ahead of the, you know,
right.
It's not like. In baseball, there's all these things that. Or football. Is.
That's why the love stories are so much stronger in all those
well,
other films.
Well, yeah, but they lend itself, but boxing lends itself more to film than anything. So
I'm off track for a second, but please tell the story. Robert is in Bull Durham, one of my, maybe the greatest baseball movie ever.
Sticks make a nice.
And tell me that story about how you figured out how to play that character in
The night before the audition, I called up my friend Bruno Kirby, the late great Bruno Kirby, and I miss him so much.
Clemenza from Godfather Part from Godfather Part 2.
If you're watching AMC all during Thanksgiving, you know. they take a 2.5-hour movie and make it 5 hours.
And Harry Met Sally,
Harry Met Sally, the wagon wheel.
The wagon wheel guy.
Bruno and I was talking to him about the coach, who only had about a half a dozen lines in the movie, in the script. And Bruno gave me the key. We had just done Good Morning Vietnam together. And he said, the key to me is that he goes where the manager goes. It's like if the manager in the minor leagues is promoted, he takes the pitching coach with him. So I said, okay, he's a yes man. That's all I had to know.
Mm-hmm.
He's a yes man. So I went into the audition, and whatever the skip said, I just started going, yep, he's right. You know, you're the base. You know, whatever it is. And Ron Shelton, because I just started going all over the place, said it was the worst audition I ever saw in my life. Bonnie Timmerman, who we'll meet later, who we'll see.
Yeah, meeting, sure.
Right? She was casting it. She made everybody wait about 2 hours. But... Bonnie apologized. According to Ron, she apologized for bringing me in. And Ron said, that's the worst audition I ever saw. Hire him immediately. He is going to bring an element to the film that I cannot get anywhere else. And then he let me go. He just totally let me go, and we became incredibly fast friends, and he's responsible for a lot of my career.
Wow.
But getting back to the...
Who else was up for that? Do you have any idea? Yeah. Did he ever tell you?
It was a small part.
Yeah.
It only had a couple... It didn't have that many lines.
Right.
You know, everything is mostly ad-libbed. Okay, so I had Rocky 1976.
These are your favorite boxing films.
It's a good box. These are good. I'm not going to say favorite.
Okay.
Million Dollar Baby is a terrific movie.
I love Million Dollar Baby.
To me,
that's
Paul
a great.
There's a lot more weight, and it talks about issues with God,
absolutely.
The church, and
I'm
the
sure.
whole thing, and about gender. I mean, that's a movie that's really good. There is a great, great documentary called When We Were Kings.
Oh, I love that.
1996.
I love that. They find all this footage. And was it Taylor Hackford, I think, was brought into... it was a director who... Somebody shot this original footage
right.
down there. There
I
was like...
Hackford. You
there was,
right.
I think it was Taylor Hackford. There was like 40,000 feet of this footage, and they didn't know what to do with it, and then he brought it in and molded it and shaped it, and it's really good.
Yeah, no, it's a documentary about Ali, Frazier, and Foreman. And they have all that Ali, Boumaier stuff from Zaire.
Yeah.
That is as good a boxing documentary as you ever see. In 1962, Requiem for a Heavyweight is a great movie.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about that film, and it is a great movie, and it started as a teleplay. Before it was a movie, it was one of those...
It was on TV, yeah.
It was like a Playhouse 90 or one of the...
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, Rod Serling, most people just know him from writing all those Twilight Zones, which are great,
yeah.
But it really shows you the strength of him doing, you know, as a playwright. I mean, you know, that's just such a good movie. I mean...
The movie version starred Anthony Quinn. As Mountain Rivera. Who was? And by the way, right. In the first scene of the movie, he gets knocked out as and he's knocked out by a young up and coming fighter named Cassius Clay.
Oh,
he's in the first scene.
I did not know that.
Cassius Clay.
That is weird, wild.
Right, and then he has to go. He's an aging fighter, and Mickey Rooney and Jackie Gleason are so good as Jackie Gleason plays this sort of corrupt manager. Mickey Rooney is a trainer, and it is so good. That's a great movie. One a favorite movie of mine from 1956, Humphrey Bogart's last film,
Heart of the Fall. Yeah.
With Rod Steiger, terrific
great.
Movie.
That's a great movie. One of Bogart's last movies.
That is Bogart's
and movie. Really, really good. Did you ever see a movie called City for Conquest with James Cagney? Where
yes, I have. Blind. He goes blind.
He goes blind and he's selling newspapers in like Times Square.
Yeah.
It's just like an old movie, but it's just solid.
And
it's
I'll give you two other boxing movies or have boxing themes in them from the 1940s. One is Gentleman Jim. With Errol Flynn.
Oh, yeah, Gentleman Jim.
Jim Corbett.
That's the first.
Great piece of Hollywood hokum, but a great piece of entertainment.
One of the first.
And the other
Errol
one
Flynn's.
That people forget, that you guys might appreciate, from 1941, Here Comes Mr. Jordan.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, he's a boxer.
The original Heaven Can Wait.
Right, he's
that's
a boxer.
Right.
Yeah, and he wants to get back
right.
into the ring.
That's right.
So then I also put The Boxer down from 1997, which is a Daniel Day-Lewis movie by the IRA. So those were the other boxing movies.
Hey, Robert, did you see the Jake Gyllenhaal movie that just came out?
Southpaw.
Yes.
What did you think of that?
I watched it on a plane, and just recently, about 2 weeks ago, I was going to Budapest, and I think I fell asleep on it because I don't remember how it ended. I remember the first 30, 40 minutes, and I go, what happened after that? Because he asked me last night, I go, did I fall asleep on that? Because I don't remember. And so, obviously, by the way, I'm becoming a big Jake Gyllenhaal fan, so, you know, it looked like a...
There's an amazing physical transformation by Jake Gyllenhaal. I mean, you got to, like, even though the movie, the script could use some work, I think that the performance by Gyllenhaal elevates the thing.
Oh,
you know?
I thought he was great last year.
I like a movie that he was in.
Yeah, the one last year.
Yeah, the Nightcrawler or what was it?
Nightcrawler. What was the other one he did when he was the cop with
Hugh Jackman?
With Pena,
where they do the ride-along.
No, it was Hugh Jackman kidnapped the daughter and
I didn't like that.
Prisoners.
Yeah, no, but he's committed. You know, his mother wrote a great movie called Running on Empty.
Oh, that was she about the people who were hiding and Judd Hirsch. And,
yes, and I swear about a year and a half ago.
Source Code. Was that Gyllenhaal?
Yeah.
The one where it jumps back in time 10 minutes. That's a good movie. He's very good in that. And here's a movie everybody hates that I love. And then you're all like, get down on me for this.
Prince of Persia?
No. I hated that movie. It's Love and Other Drugs with Anne Hathaway. I thought that was a really interesting. I really liked that film a lot.
But Buffed Up, this is basically the guy who was the chick in Brokeback Mountain, I think. And like, what a transformation this guy.
Well, he was. He was Donnie Darko, if I'm not mistaken.
No, Jake Gyllenhaal.
Wasn't he Donnie Darko?
Yeah.
The thing about Naomi, I can't think of her last name, who wrote Running on Empty. That's his mom. And that movie, I watched it again about 2 years ago, which Jake, you mentioned.
Martha Plimpton, I think, is in that, maybe?
Well, the one who's in it that you forget how great he is River Phoenix.
Right.
He was just about, he was getting older then, and he played the son, and you'll watch
these are
him.
Activists that went underground, and they were hiding.
Yeah.
It was a little movie.
It was but it's really good. And was it Joe Beth Williams? Christine Lottie?
Yeah, I think Christine Lottie. Yeah.
And it's really good, and Judd Hirsch, and it's really, and he's so good, and you realize watching River Phoenix. He would have been
another
DiCaprio.
One that would have been.
He would have been DiCaprio.
I interviewed River Phoenix, and I got to tell you, I've interviewed everybody, and there was something wrong with that kid. And a colleague of mine who McCuddy and I know, and Bergoglio knows also, Bill Deal, who used to work for ABC Radio.
Yeah, sure.
We went in, I did a radio interview with him, and then Bill Deal did a radio interview with him, and then we're coming down the elevator, and I just looked at him going, like, was your interview completely screwed up? And I'm going, this kid couldn't even answer a coherent question. I mean, you'd ask him the most basic question, like, what made you want to do, you know, this particular movie? And he's just, you know, babbling and rambling.
Another envelope-pushing question from Neil.
I'm saying you could ask him the most basic question.
Yeah.
And, like, what is your name or
so
something?
So what was the takeaway? You think
the takeaway was something
it was
really, something was really
was it
off.
Drugs or was it like De Niro? I mean, you got to tell you.
No, it wasn't right. De Niro.
No, De Niro, in the first 20 years, wasn't the best.
No, it wasn't De Niro. It was he was on something. Okay. Something was wrong. But Bergoglio, you like the Hurricane, the Denzel Washington?
Yeah.
I like that one, and I like the Tyson documentary. You know, with James
Toback did on Tyson.
And I
on
too.
The show said Snatch, and I just have to say again,
Snatch is fun.
I love a lot of
Snatch
fun.
Is, I
great
forgot
ride.
About Snatch. Snatch is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Amy. Robert, did you see Amy? We're going to talk about Amy. All right. So there's this Amy Winehouse documentary.
She could punch. But she couldn't take a punch.
And I think it's okay, but I got to tell you, did you see it for
Gold? Oh, yeah, I saw it. I interviewed the director, Asif Kapadia, who also made a movie about Ayrton Senna, and he used the same technique.
Senna was good.
Yeah, Senna was good. And this guy, this director used the same technique where he doesn't not use talking heads. He
doesn't. People who were alive.
Right. Yeah. Also, yeah, people are alive.
He only does dead people.
But he doesn't have people in.
If he calls you for an interview, check and go to the doctor.
Well, what did he have to say to you about these?
Well, first, I asked him, talk about basic questions. What surprised him the most when he researched Amy Winehouse?
I had no idea she was so intelligent and funny. You know, that's what the simple things were the things that really. Lyrics are one of them, okay, the genius of lyrics, but actually, as a person, she was a laugh. You would have liked to have hung out with her. You wish you'd met her. You think, you know, you're going to be mates. And it kept turning up. See, people who knew her would say, that person that everyone saw on stage, that's not who she was. The real Amy was so different. And everyone I met, you could just see as they talked to you, everyone would cry.
And then he told all of us present that Amy's life was pretty much all in her lyrics.
Everything you need to know about Amy's life was there in her diary, which is her lyrics. Every single song is based on a real incident. It's all kind of documenting her own life in her own words. Stronger Than Me, it's all about that. She wants someone who's stronger than her. What is it about men? Love is a losing game. Rehab. Rehab is a real incident. That was really a big moment when you realize rehab is about Nick, the first manager who took her to rehab. Everything that she wrote happened.
That's true. You know, that rehab, if you watch the movie, it talks about, you know, the father. My father says I'm okay, I don't need to go to rehab. Right. This is all in the movie, you know?
It is, and it's too bad. The movie also introduces us to what I said in the show, it would have been Etta James. I mean, she was an incredible jazz singer, this woman, and we know her for this pop song, largely, that she had to kind of live down. She, at the end, she didn't like singing it. It was, you know, I want to do my new material, which is like what every band does. And every audience says, no, we want to hear Rehab. And
she
had a lot of demons, and they're all pretty well portrayed. But the film is a touch long.
It's too
That's
long
what
for
I've
me.
Heard.
It's,
everybody
here's the problem. I'm reading that, you know, they send you the screener. When I saw it on the Academy screener. And there's all these quotes on it. A masterpiece, genius, a work of art. And, you know, I watched this with my wife. And I've got to tell you, I was actually bored. The first hour of the film, which is before she reached fame and fortune, you know, that could have been 20 minutes. It's just home video footage of her, you know.
Driving around on the road. Going
yeah,
to the
and, you know, singing food. At birthday parties and just doing stuff. And it's like, I was bored. Then when she gets famous, it gets more interesting. But I also thought that was a little dragged out. There were some interesting moments.
You were
moments.
Ready for the drugs, in other words.
The scene with Tony Bennett is really good.
Tony Bennett documentary when he was doing his duets album.
Right.
And he goes
well, that's
to
in the
her,
movie.
And at first, they cancel because she can't do it. And then when he goes to see her, I don't know if they show that clip where she's breaking down and he talks to her about
that's really strong.
Was it Dinah Washington or somebody he's talking to her about?
He's her idol.
Yeah, he says.
Some jazz artist.
Yeah, somebody very famous.
And then she lights up about that.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
there
yeah,
was
yeah.
a couple, I mean.
Big pothead.
When she.
Been,
what
do you call it? Tony Bennett.
Tony really? Bennett?
No. Well, she's.
Toki Bennett.
There's a couple of, like, really good scenes in there. There's a scene where she goes to do a concert in Serbia. And they all start booing. She gets on stage, and the band's playing, and she won't sing. She just won't sing, and they cancel the tour. And that's captured on video, and that's a very interesting scene.
Serbia's a tough crowd. I just, you know, I was doing yuck yucks
funny.
Specific jokes just don't go.
Yeah. You know, and there's some other scenes in there that are pretty interesting. There's a scene where you know, in the beginning, when you see her, this chubby kid, and she's singing actually "Happy Birthday" at a party
14
before.
Years old,
right? How old?
14.
Right, and you know, it's before. any of she had a career at all. And you know, there are moments, but there's a lot of slow moments, you know. And I think it would have been a solid like 35-40 minute documentary. And I don't understand why everybody's raving that it's this unbelievable film. And plus, one of her great songs, which is Valerie, they don't even play that song until over the end credits, and it's not even the great studio version. It's some like slowed down acoustical version of Valerie. So I don't know. That's a minor quibble, but I think it's okay. But I
just
think
like that you've played clubs in Serbia.
Yeah, no, it was a tough road though.
Chuckles in Serbia.
And the other.
No, Chuckles was in
Bosnia.
The Bosnia and Herzegovina.
The room in Serbia is called the Improvda.
Improvda. Oh, good. I like that.
That's very good. I got two comics sitting with me. All right, so. Robert, I want to talk about this in our limited time. So the Academy, you're an Academy voter.
I am.
Okay. And already, you know, it's interesting. There's this website called goldderby.com. And before anybody even saw any of these movies, they're already giving you odds on what's going to
win. It's a lock for Leo. No one's seen Revenant.
And we were talking about beforehand. It's like, this is one of those movies, and it happens at Casey, where it's this is the movie that they decide, and nobody sees it. There was a great line when The Last Emperor won Best Picture. That Albert Brooks said, congratulations to The Last Emperor for winning the Oscar. Now the Academy is going to have to see it.
Right.
Because it's one of those things. And I think probably this is going to fall with Leo. There's no way the Academy is going to watch this movie. From what I understand, I'm not going to see this movie.
Don't kid yourself. Half the Academy didn't see 12 Years a Slave. Don't kid yourself.
I wouldn't doubt that too much. But compared to this,
right?
Compared to this one, I think it'd be
The Hampton Film Festival, I saw Spotlight. And when that movie was over, I turned to my wife and I said, this movie will now win Best Picture because it has all the, and by the way, I love the film. I love the film. But it has all the elements that are the earmarked for an Oscar-winning Best Picture. It's an important film. It deals with a controversial subject that should be brought to light. It's got an all-star cast. It's got a great cast.
Well,
I mean, Michael Keaton, Mark Ruffalo.
It's not an A-list cast in the sense of having the super movie star.
But Keaton will probably win Best Supporting Actor
because he got dumped on.
Because he didn't get Birdman last year.
Yeah.
Right, well, you were in Batman with Michael Keaton.
I've known Michael a long time.
And Michael, by the way, Michael started out as a stand-up comedian,
yes,
and you started out
together.
As a stand-up comedian.
We
so were you guys doing, New York clubs? Or were
no,
you doing
Michael's a Pittsburgh comic, and I met him in L.A.
Were the improv or the comedy store?
Comedy store. A couple times. We were all young guys starting out there together, and then when I got out there, he immediately got cast on Mary Tyler Moore had a short-lived variety show.
Letterman was on that,
The supporting cast players, or troopers, Letterman, Keaton, Swoozy Kurtz, I think there's somebody else there, too. But Michael, and then Michael.
And that show lasted 6 episodes.
Something like that. But Michael was a good guy. And
was he funny?
Yeah, he was a good comic.
Had a good act? I mean, it was a.
Yeah, it was an act, you know. Uh-huh. It's like, in fact, he did, and I talked about this, he did a Johnny Dangerously movie he made?
Yeah,
with Joe, Joe Piscopo?
Right, and he did a character like that. Yeah, that's a ticket. You know, he would do all that stuff.
Oh.
And he did it before John Lovitz did The Liar.
Really?
And it was very similar. And I once asked Michael, did you? Well, he goes, well, I don't know if he saw me or not, you know, but that was the character.
Right.
But again, we don't know if he saw him or not.
But it wasn't observational humor.
It
wasn't
character.
Your stand-up comedy, and I've said this many times, but I'll say it on the podcast, your routine on Born to Run, the movement of making Born to Run the state anthem of New Jersey is one of the funniest pieces of comedy, and you break down the lyrics, it's just a brilliant piece of comedy, but that's observational, so Keaton wasn't doing observation, he was doing more like
characters and
so Michael, see, this gets down to the Oscars thing in period. First of all, Bill, when you wrote the email yesterday, you hit it on the head. You said, let's handicap, because that's what this is, it's a horse race. That's all it is. This is a piece of marketing. Like I said, with Tommy Lee Jones, he said, it's the world's greatest trade show, and that's what it is.
Yeah.
To think that something is the best. My dad, who's, you know, nothing to do with show business, we grew up in New Jersey, used to say, Robert, ask me a question. How can somebody be the best actor one year and not be the best actor the next? Did he forget how to act?
Right.
Well, let everybody play the same part, and I'll tell you who the best actor is. And I go, Dad, not even then, because you could have different interpretations.
Well,
so this whole thing about best and who's going to win and stuff like that. This is strictly about marketing. And I say this, and I'm totally in favor of this. This is a great tool for the Hollywood industry. And if you don't believe, this is all about money. It is about nothing else but money and marketing.
Do you think that was true in 27? Do you think that was
more so
from the beginning?
More so. You know how the Academy started? The Academy started at a dinner in 1927 that the whole studio heads put together because they invited everybody there And the intent of it was to talk about forming the Motion Picture Association to keep out the unions. You don't have to unionize writers. Directors, you don't have to unionize. We're a family. We'll take care of you, everything. And the last 15 minutes of the evening,
they gave
out these awards, and everybody showed up, and Louis V. Mayer said, you know, you give these people medals, they'll show up for anything. And that's how it had nothing to do with anything except getting people there to bust unions, not to start it.
So
this whole romance of the Oscars.
Well,
is as, and I'm a member, and I'm totally supporting it because it helps my profession. It helps bring money. But I, and look, how many dinners are we going to? They're hiring Peggy Siegel to do all this stuff, not because this is business.
In New York, and then they're doing a bunch of them in L.A.
This is business. This has nothing to do. I mean, it's like, you have people winning Oscars for singing a song. Anne Hathaway and Jennifer Hudson sang a song in one house. I mean, so
there's a lunch today for La Bernadette.
Right.
For 99 Homes at La Bernadette.
Right.
La Bernadette, a very expensive place. 99 Homes doesn't have a prayer.
Right.
Doesn't have a prayer. But Michael Shannon's great in it.
Right. But what they're doing is they're trying to get maybe a nomination for, because I don't being. I got to tell you, I talk with all the studio heads. How much? X amount of dollars if you get a Best Actor nomination for them.
Yeah.
X amount if you win it.
But let me ask you something. Then how? Okay, first of all, I agree with you, and there is no best. It's not like, I mean, you having created and been Arliss, the sports guy, right? It's not like it's a race, a swimming meet where it's like this guy's the best. He did it in the best time or a track.
It's
who like
who didn't win last year.
Right.
Who's the new young face?
Right. So it's a subjective thing.
That gets me the new young face.
But let me ask you this. Okay, they knew in advance. In 1970, that George C. Scott said publicly that if he won the Oscar for Patton, he hated the Academy. He doesn't believe
in competition,
it, and he was not accepted.
Same with Woody.
Yet he wins.
Yeah.
Okay, Marlon Brando. They kind of knew that he wouldn't show up for the garbage.
That was different. They didn't quite know. About
so then go to the George C. Scott one. Okay,
yeah.
He wins, and he's not campaigning.
Right.
So how do you account for that win, though?
Because people voted for him. I mean, but that's one out of. And by the way, the campaigning then, even though it was going on, is nothing.
Right.
You would take out an ad.
Harvey Weinstein changed it.
Yeah,
all.
I mean, that's nothing like what's going on now.
So a guy that decided, like George C. Scott today, that says, like, I'm not going to campaign and I hate the Academy,
right.
He couldn't win now, is what you're saying with the way.
I don't know he couldn't win it for a performance like that. It depends on your competition. You also got to remember something else. That is also during the Vietnam War. And you had a lot of anti-war films. You had, like, a MASH going on there. And you had Butch Cassidy about that time. So, and here comes Patton.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and isn't
right.
that,
interesting.
You know,
well, Coppola wrote the screenplay on that.
Part of it, yeah. He wrote the opening speech, I think. The so that's all, but that's one out of, you know, and he was so good in it. And he was George C. Scott. He had been nominated before. And it's like, and it was, and I don't know who the rest of the competition was that year, you know, so, which has a lot to do with it, you know. But that's one out of, what, 70?
Probably Jack Lemmon and something.
Yeah, Jack Lemmon's like Meryl Streep back then, yeah. You have to understand this is about money. Okay, this is only about money. Because to say somebody's so, that said, because they are worth money. I mean, Tommy Lee Jones, we were doing Cobb, and he was nominated for The Fugitive.
Right.
And he lost the year before for JFK. And we talked about this all the time. And he goes, you can make all the stuff you want, and it's an honor. And all these people get nominated are good. They're good at the very least. But he said, but those are worth money, those statues. Because if you get a nomination, at the very least, you're going to get hospitalization the rest of your life. You're going to work. You're going to get enough work to have hospitalization for you and your family the rest of your life. That's more important to me than that's real. That's real. You know, people who are, if you get a nomination, you're not going to have to stand in the cattle call anymore. You're not going to have, you may not become a superstar, but you're going to have work. You can be able to work and feed your family the rest of your life. So that's number one.
Shelley Winters took her Oscar to an audition one time, put it on the desk in front of this young director and said, okay, what do you want me to
Right. So.
What happened to F. Murray Abraham?
But he still works. He still works. He didn't become a superstar because of the part, but he still works. What would have happened to I'll put it this way. Would F. Murray Abraham ever had the career he had if it hadn't been for Avideus? No.
Hmm.
No. I mean, and he's still an Oscar winner, so that's always going to be your first line in your obituary.
Yeah, that's always the first line in everything.
That's going to be your first line, so it's already written, your obituary. So I have certain guidelines with that in mind on how I vote. The Academy's very strict on telling you, do not tell anybody who you voted for, which is amazing, because in Hollywood, everybody's up there stumping for the President of the United States, for who they can think, but God forbid you tell anybody who you voted for the Oscar. Okay, so I have certain guidelines that I follow because of that. Number one, who's my friend?
Number really? One. You make no shame in that at all?
First of all, again, let me go back to the first one. You got to be good. You have to have done some performance that puts you in the, you know, in the competition.
Right.
In the competition. So who's my
But
friend?
You help nominate, too.
Yes, I do.
Right.
But I'm saying, I'm not going to nominate Good Burger. I was in that. My friends in it. But who's a friend who's worked, you know, who I've grown up with, who's got a family, who's going to have hospitalization the rest of your life? Who do I want to see, you know, it's my friend. Because at the end of the day, it's what it's about. Because you can't tell me who won last year after time. That's number one. Who's my friend? Number two, and here's a hard, fast rule that I've never broken. Under no circumstances, no kids. Under any circumstance whatsoever, no kids. It's like, this is my craft. This is a craft. This is what people work for. I don't want to care. The year Tommy Lee Jones won. Anna Paquin was up. And we would rail, I go, this 12-year-old girl is going to win an Oscar. This 12-year-old girl, where the director says, okay, go stand over there and cry. Go do this and did you do this? I go, this girl's going to win an Oscar. And Tommy Lee Jones, supposedly, after they both won the Oscar, they're taking pictures afterwards. And I don't know if this is true, but it sounds like Tommy said, congratulations to Anna Paquin. Now you can get a part in the school play. As only Tommy could. But
so you
no
look at
kids,
them. You look at them as not individual. Since you're voting, you're not looking, if I'm to understand this correctly, at an individual performance. You're looking at a career achievement.
Yes.
So
because it is your first line.
So what about a first time? What about somebody really new?
As a rule, like, no, I don't.
Okay, now here's a movie that I love.
Track record.
Okay,
it's like Bill Parcells, the great coach of the Giants, used to say. Can somebody win a few games before you put them in the Hall of Fame? You know what I'm saying? No first times.
Right.
Because you wind up with, by the way, it happens with women much more than men.
Yeah, they just, who won for The English Patient? She beat Lauren Bacall.
Exactly.
But it's Lauren Bacall was locked and loaded on that.
I'm sorry.
Locked and loaded. I mean,
because I had the list here. I said, you had all the Jennifers. Jennifer Hudson, Jennifer Lawrence, Jennifer Connelly. Okay. Then you had, I mean, like I said, Natalie Portman, Lupita Nyong'o.
Luongo.
Monique. look at these people who win Oscars here. Let's talk about this. And then you have, of course, the bait, the Oscar bait with, like,
did Monique win the Oscar?
Yeah.
I predicted that.
Charlize Theron, Halle Berry, Gwyneth Paltrow, Rachel Weisz, Anna Paquin. Then you had the three women who won for the same part. Mira Sorvino, Mercedes Rule, Marissa Tomei. All playing the hooker with the heart of gold.
Well, Marissa Tomei wasn't supposed to win.
Yeah, there's that whole story.
No, that's not
true. I was writing
true.
The Oscars
that's
that year.
With Jack,
oh, right.
So did you think Jack Palance read the envelope?
No, what happened was, I really believe, I can't remember, there was four Brits nominated that. It was four Brits and
Marissa Tomei.
And I'm sure all the Brits split it. And Marissa Tomei, that kind of performance can win. That's a comic performance. The same thing with Mercedes Rule, the same performance with Mira Sorvino. The right. hooker, the wisecracking hooker with a heart of gold. That always wins.
See, I hope.
Shelley Winters. Not Shelley Winters, Shirley Jones.
Now, you probably, you're voting, and you probably disagree with this, but I thought Saoirse Ronan in Brooklyn was phenomenal. And it's not her first part. She was great in Hannah. She was nominated for an Academy Award but didn't win an Atonement. She's been really, she's been, all right, so she's only 21. She's great. And that is the best performance. That is the best. I think she's great.
I said she's great.
She's a kid.
I already got my vote already lined up for the best actress.
We should say that we're running a little long today, but this is such a fascinating conversation. It's totally worth it. And we have, if you're, just to remind you, Robert Wall is a voter in the Academy Awards. Do you have anything to do with any other organization? You're in the Writers Guild, I assume.
I'm in the Writers Guild.
So you vote for screenplays, too.
Directors Guild, SAG.
Right.
Equity. I have a lot of guilds. I'm in a lot of unions.
So you vote a lot.
I have a ballot a lot, so that'll turn it in.
So before we go, Robert, what are you working on these days?
One part I'm doing a thing for PBS. It looks like based on this Paris thing.
What a junket this is! What a great job! Tell them what this.
Well,
is.
If it happens.
I watched the pilot and I thought it was
a sizzle reel, right?
But Travel Channel dumped it. But that was great.
But we're trying to do what's PBS that might happen there. I was just in Budapest. I mentioned I'm about to adapt the longest running musical in Budapest history for the Nederlanders for an American audience called The Attic. I'm working on another musical that I'm going to Ann Arbor for series I can't talk about. That has great possibilities there. And it was one more.
When you say musical, are you wondering the book? Are you writing lyrics? Or you're collaborating?
I'm writing the book. I'm co-writing the lyrics on the Budapest thing.
Oh, cool.
I've written the book for the other project. That one, if I told you what it was, you'd know I'm not writing the lyrics. So,
oh, right.
So
yes, right. I know what it is, but
I think I do too.
I won't say right. since right. you're. Since you're.
That's what I'm doing right now, and you know, enjoying New York.
Had a great run on HBO as America's coolest college professor.
I love that. I love doing that.
That was great. And then you spun that off into a stage thing too, right?
Yes. Yeah, short time. Yeah.
That was called. Remind me.
Assume the position.
Right. And are you gonna do another one of those?
I'd love.
Where
to
you
do
debunk
one. I
fame?
I love doing those things. It's not so much a debunking. It's a question of, like we talked about the Oscars today, about how this stuff happens and what it morphs into. You know, you got to remember, the studios spend millions of dollars on these campaigns. They're not doing it because of, you know, they really
right.
believe
right.
that, you know, they know that if they have more, which is why when I talked to Harvey Weinstein and I talked around that they should have a best comedy category, because comedies never get nominated. If you look, I guarantee you.
look at the Golden Globes this year,
which decided
Joy is a comedy.
I didn't know that.
And The Martian. Now, which one was funnier? Martian or Jennifer Lawrence inventing a mop?
You know, I haven't seen it, but the fact is,
well, at least the Critics' Choice.
Has a
favorite
category.
The Critics' Choice
and
does.
The reason, everything should. It's a different animal. They have best animated feature. They have a documentary. Comedies aren't so. I guarantee it. When you have your 10 best and 10 worst films at the end of the year, you may have one or two comedies on the list.
No, not me.
But I guarantee you have five comedies on your 10 worst list.
No, not me.
I guarantee.
Not
and
me.
If you ask any actor
not
which
me.
Is harder, they will all
Everybody
say comedy.
No.
Comedy
is harder, and you know, especially you're not even performing it as you know as a comic in front of a live audience. You're doing it. Multiple takes where even the crew isn't laughing by the third or fourth time that you've
crew
done
not
it.
Laughing is not that big a deal.
So you've got overcome. But you have no. This
it's
the
a
timing
of a question of comedy is not as
there
serious.
There are many.
Not,
yeah.
If you look at it, that's why I loved when Shakespeare in Love won as much as I do like Private Ryan. I loved when Shakespeare.
Hey,
in
Funny
Love.
People, which you probably don't like, was my favorite movie of the year that it came out.
That's a good movie about
good
comedy.
You.
You know, because there have been so
and
many
I,
bad.
And Judge
ones.
A great friend. God, I wish he had a better scissor.
All right. Yeah. Well, we're
Trainwreck.
Out of time.
Trainwreck. Amy Schumer, they say, should be nominated for an Oscar. Jeffrey Wells, big campaign this year.
Right. But a couple of reasons they do this, too. One is to placate stars.
Of course.
And
it's
sometimes,
in the contract.
By the way, a lot of this stuff is contractual.
Contractual. It's in the contract.
In their contracts that they have to put X amount of dollars towards an Oscar campaign.
So next week on the show, we're going to talk about The Big Short, which is
Marty.
What's that? It's about the bust in Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae in 2007. The way the bottom dropped out of the real estate market, it stars Christian Bale and Ryan Gosling and Steve Carell and Brad Pitt.
Wow.
And we're going to be talking about that movie as well as a movie called Phoenix, which is coming out on demand. Coming to DVD, which is supposed to be, we're going to watch it between now and when the next podcast, supposed to be excellent. And we're also going to. No, it's about the Holocaust. And we're going to do a movie called, we're going to do Ant-Man, which is coming on demand.
Our friend Paul Rudd, who is in every independent movie or everything on demand. And Paul Dano won a Gotham last night for Love and Mercy, and I'm going to give that one more plug. I love that
film. Did you see Helen Mirren's speech yesterday?
All right. We want to thank Robert Wall.
Come back, Robert. This was fun.
Come back. We want to thank Bill McCuddy, as always.
We want to.
And Bill Bregoli. Say good night, Bill.
Good night.
Good night. And this is Neil Rosen. We'll see you next week on Sitting Around Talking Movies. We'll be right back.